Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. On the eve of Euro 2020, today we'll be looking ahead to the chances of England, Wales and Scotland. Of course, we'll also make our predictions for the stars of the competition and wish a very big welcome to the special one, Jose Mourinho, who's joining the Game family. Loads to come on the Game Euro 2020. I'm Hugh Woozencroft. I'm in Baku, Azerbaijan, 2,500 miles from home. But don't worry, plenty for us to discuss. I'll try my best to come through loud and clear as well. We're going to be with you each and every day throughout the tournament. So much for us to look forward to, a long overdue international tournament. But make sure you subscribe right now so you don't miss any of the daily content and the best of the action and reaction across the continent in the coming weeks. Joining me today to get it all started, Jonathan Northcroft, Tom Roddy, and welcome back, Gregor Robertson.
Daddy,
oh, very own.
Daddy cool.
That's nice. That's lovely.
Enjoying life as a new dad, brother?
Thought of it a cool bit. Yes. It's like everything they tell you is true. It's so intense. The love. It's like elation and exhaustion in equal measure. And, you know, after 2 weeks of about an average of 3 hours sleep, you might need to give me a virtual shake from time to time. But I'm delighted to be back and have some football to talk about.
What's harder, playing football professionally, 90 minutes, tough, grueling game in the EFL, or a sleepless night with a young baby?
There is no comparison. It's the sleepless night only. I should have had children 10 years earlier when maybe I could have coped with the sleepless nights a little bit better. But it is the hardest thing. I could tell already, after 2 weeks, it's going to be the hardest thing experience of my life, but also the best.
Absolutely, I'm sure. Jonathan will attest the most rewarding thing he's probably ever done as well. Look, except for the Game Podcast, of course. Loads for us to discuss today, exactly. Loads for us to discuss today. Because look, we've just been waiting so long for a tournament like this. Tomorrow we'll reflect on the first game, the opener between Italy and Turkey. But today I really wanted to talk about the overarching possibilities and hopes for the home nations going into this. There are big hopes for some nations, of course, in this, but maybe more questions than answers for others. And I think on that point, we have to start with England and Gareth Southgate, their manager, because there were reports that the system's going to change, the personnel's going to change, four fullbacks starting in the newspapers this morning. Who's going to be in that front three? All those questions that we've been debating and newspapers and fans have been talking about over the past few weeks. We've got to the eve of the tournament, basically, and we still don't really know. We aren't really any clearer on it. And I just wonder whether that means England have no real chance, of winning this competition. When you look at the other big nations and the comfort level with which the likes of Italy and France go into it in terms of the settled formation and the settled personnel as well. Jonathan Northcroft, firstly, does that mean England can't win this? And also, does that mean that the performance is going to be at a level where Gareth Southgate is going to be really heavily judged?
He's going to be heavily judged. I mean, the anticipation for this tournament is huge with all the talented young players and the element of it being a home tournament. And I think he's had his summer of love. He's had his waistcoat moment, and now he's going to get a little bit more severely looked at, whatever happens, but he's probably ready for that. I mean, I've been thinking about the same thing as you, Hugh, but the fact that we're so far away from knowing fundamental things about that England team, the formation for one of them, you know, clearly the best back four, the midfield combination. I think all we really know is that Harry Kane is going to play and Declan Rice is going to play and John Stones is going to play. It's a curious way to go into the tournament when, as you say, you know, the French team, for example, are so well oiled and well established. The Portuguese team are, you know, pretty familiar, and they've done that thing of you know, rehearsing a team before a tournament. The Croatia team England play are hugely well established. So England are going in with a different approach, and I think it's dangerous. I think it's odd that even the warm-up games involved using players that aren't even going to the tournament, giving players a debut. I mean, I don't think any other major countries going in like this. The one thing that in Gareth's kind of defense or locker might be that the build up to the 2018 World Cup wasn't dissimilar. I remember writing stuff on the eve of that tournament about how he really needs to sort out his, you know, formation, and he needs to do this and his defense and so on. And he was still trialing things. I mean, Jesse Lingard came in quite late before that tournament, had a great performance against Holland and booked his spot. Loftus-Cheek came in late as an option. I think the midfield combination of Lingard and Ali as a kind of, you know, two sort of free eights, that was quite a belated idea. So he has done this before and pulled it off. But there's more experimentation this time. And I think it's more difficult in many ways as well than the World Cup, where really there was a benign opening game and the draw opened up for England, and I think the England are going to have to be on it a bit more from the start this time.
Tom, what do you think? Do England have to hit the ground running? If so, how do they go into this weekend?
I'm not entirely sure you have to hit the ground running, because that's not necessarily how the successful teams always do begin tournaments. They need to not fall straight through the trap door in the first game, essentially, and set the tone. How do they approach it? I mean, the problem is they'll look at the opposition, Croatia, who are incredibly impressive in the middle of the park. And so they have to counter that, essentially. They have to counter that, which is largely why, and they're so dangerous on the edge of the box, which is largely why there is this debate over whether he's going to play three at the back that then sort of nullifies that, or whether he plays with the four at the back and two holding midfielders, the kind of dogs of war in Calvin Phillips and Declan Rice And I still have no idea. And as Johnny rightly says, it feels like the biggest issue is that we're talking with Thursday morning, and we're going to be exactly the same on Saturday, thinking ahead of a game the next day, and have no idea who's going to be in the starting 11. The one thing though, David Walsh wrote a really good piece on last weekend on Sunday, which was all about that kind of the way things have progressed with England, that Southgate's kind of the atomic kitten summer of 2018 has gone, and now he's going to be measured, and he, that credit's kind of not gone, but won't be, has been used up a little bit, and which I agree with. But I also think in the last few days he has reminded us why we sort of fell in love with him that summer. The Dear England that he wrote for the Players' Tribune, the way he's spoken, the way the England media days over the last couple of days, and the openness that we had from that squad 3 years ago, it's really reminded us why we fell in love with them again. But the big problem is how they handle the expectation this summer, because, you know, going into 2018, they were, it was nowhere near this. I mean, Harry Shane spoke about it in the Sunday Times last weekend, that that they were, there was the doom and gloom around the last Euros with Roy Hodgson, what happened there. It was complete doom and gloom and no expectation whatsoever. And sometimes I just think teams thrive off that. They have a fearlessness because there's no expectation. Now they go into this tournament, and I mean, for some bookies, they're the favourites, which I don't think they should be considered quite as high as France and Belgium, but they are considered, and they know it. They know they're considered the favourites, and Harry Kane said that in that interview that they've got to work out how to handle being one of the favourites this time.
Gregor, respond to that then. Where do you see England in terms of the favourites? And the level of expectation, how do you see it affecting them?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question. The expectation... I saw something that only Italy are kind of less experienced in terms of their squad makeup. You know, for some of these players, a lot of young players in this team, and you think that could be kind of, there could be some freedom about them, but there is a lot of expectation, a lot of kind of weight on their shoulders. And the only thing I would say is, you know, there are a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of issues to discuss in England's team, but there are lots of solutions. I mean, solutions that most countries would bite your hands off for. You're talking about whether they would go to a back three now, and your initial reaction is that would seem pretty crazy after, you know, making a transition to the back four and finding a pretty much a system of play that we all recognise now. But they've lost Harry Maguire. He's not fit for the opening game, and that's a big weakness. And before, when we were talking about, have England got two solid centre-halves to play together, or want somebody to play along Maguire, then Stones emerged and he thought, yeah, he could play a back four. Take Harry Maguire out of that. And the question, you know, it doesn't seem that mad to go to a back three, because who comes in alongside Stones? I'm not sure. So that, you know, that's one thing. Then you think about who's going to play alongside Rice in midfield, and you've got Jude Bellingham coming through. And I know it's about balancing some level of experience and these young, exciting players, but I think England really have to trust that Southgate is the man who sees them every day in training, who knows what they're capable of, and is the right person to make those decisions. Because I agree with Tom. I think, you know, well, the football has not always been, you know, scintillating, or it's not shown a rapid progression per se. I think we all know that Southgate is the best man for the job at the moment for England. And I think really it's about trying to trust him to make those decisions. And I think, you know, I think England have got a really good chance to go far, to go to the semi-final stage, at least this year. Harry Kane will always get goals. You know, an abundance of riches up top in attack. I think you're right. It is about how they handle the pressure. But I still believe England have got a really good chance to be a success this year.
As someone who's played, do you look at him as a coach and think he doesn't really know his own mind? Have you played for a manager before where the players are looking around? And I'm not saying the England players are necessarily doing this, but where the system often changes. Does that change your confidence in the boss?
It depends. I mean, I think it's about the kind of the context and the conviction they have in making that decision, those changes. And I think everyone would agree that Steve Holland alongside him is a very astute tactical mind. I think it depends on the context. And I think if you were looking, as I say, at that decision to perhaps move to a back three without Harry Maguire there, that would not seem ludicrous. And you know, he's got so many talented players to try and fit into attack. That for me is England's biggest issue. Whether they play a back three or a back four, it's about selecting the right kind of formula up front and getting Foden, getting Grealish on the pitch too. I think, you know, this could be a huge tournament for Grealish. It's about that. That is the really biggest question for England, I think, getting that formula up front right.
Jonathan, what do you think? Does Gareth Southgate know his own mind? I look at the other managers, Joachim Löw, I look at even Martinez at Belgium, but Deschamps, of course, Mancini with Italy. You know, these managers seem to have a philosophy and a strong one at that. Do you feel that about Gareth Southgate?
I think there's a consistency of principles, and that's probably what will draw the players along. You know, you can change formation as long as the messages are the same. And I think the messages are quite sort of consistent for England. You know, we know he wants to play out. He wants to press quite high, and he wants to trust attacking players. Sometimes you see Gareth battling against instincts. I think there is still some old-fashioned. I think there is a clash between this, all those things I've just said, but there are some kind of more instincts that come from, I guess, the football era that he played in himself. So he always wants to have two holding midfielders when it comes to really big games, and that goes against sometimes his desire to, you know, press from the front and be sort of front foot about stuff. But I think in general he does. I think in fairness to him, it's what Gregor says. It's he keeps getting sort of curveballs thrown at him in the form of injuries or young talents emerging. And I think that is the biggest reason that he's been changing over the last year. The funny thing about three at the back is, you know, we're kind of talking about it maybe as a sticking plaster for because Harry Maguire's injured and it's an extra safety measure. Why not play that in the warm-up games then? That'd be one thing for me. And also, England's worst sequence of results came last autumn with three at the back, against the defeats against Denmark and Belgium consecutively. And I think he'd gone back to three at the back after the Nations League, where England were exposed a couple of times defensively. And there'd been the Kosovo game, which was chaotic before that, and the defeat against the Czechs. I think he went back to three at the back in search of defensive solidity and actually didn't get it because he then sort of ran aground against those better teams. So there's also evidence that's kind of contradictory to him. There's three at the back was great at the World Cup. It made us solid, but actually it hasn't worked since then. It just goes back to I think it's not all Gareth's mind that's brought us here, but it just goes back to the fact that there's still so many questions on the eve of this tournament. And if nothing else, I think the two warm-up games was very weird. I think you could excuse all the kind of the injuries and young players emerging, blah, blah, blah. But I think those two warm-up games, I know the Champions League players were, the final players weren't there, but I did expect to see a bit more of the England that are going to play in that first game being worked on. Instead, we had players who aren't even going to be at the tournament playing.
Gregor, you've played in defence. Reports this week. I know. Look, listen, at least if you're going to choose that many fullbacks in the squad, we now have an answer for why. There are reports that he's working on a system that would see Ben Chilwell play as a wing-back, Reece James play on the other side as a wing-back, and both Luke Shaw and Kyle Walker start in the back three with John Stones. Four fullbacks starting the game. I mean, that's commitment to a philosophy. Everything I've said before is totally wrong. Can you see it happening? Will it work?
See, everyone thought he was crazy when he was selecting four right-backs, so maybe he needed them all. There's no one in that you would say is like a square peg in a round hole. It's like, it wouldn't be so ludicrous. Scotland use it to great effect with Tierney and Robertson combining down the left. If you're a team that's going to be dominating possession, having somebody who's very good on the ball and willing to step out with it, it's not, you know, that's a strength. I don't know. I personally, I can't see it. I can't see that being the lineup personally, particularly against a team the strength of Croatia, maybe against Scotland, but but no, that's Luke Shaw has been outstanding this season, and he has at times played that position in a back three. Chilwell's had a strong season. I mean, you look at the makeup of England's fullbacks. Players have won the Champions League, won the Premier League in the last in recent times. You know, it's ridiculous. Won La Liga. All these players. So if England were to play a back three, I don't think it wouldn't seem ludicrous having fullbacks playing either side. Perhaps one rather than two, though.
Might even try and squeeze in Kieran Trippier as a number 10. Who knows? Tom Roddy, we're going to come to Scotland next before we talk Wales, and we'll hear Jose Mourinho's thoughts on who might impress in the tournament as well. But look, let us as England fans, let's have a quick chat for a moment. How are you feeling, mate? Honestly, tell me, compared to all the other tournaments that we've been to, are you more confident now or less?
Probably more, with a heavy, heavy hint of anticipation. I mean, it's. I think the thing is, listening to, I saw the stuff about Luke Shaw playing left side of centre back last night, and as Gregor said, it's not. It could work, but we don't know if it could work. And the fact that we don't know what that starting lineup is going to be in any way, shape or form. I mean, I scribbled down just before we started a couple of starting 11s that are pretty different with different formations, and I just have absolutely no idea where we're going with it. But I think with Harry Kane in the team, you just think there's a massive chance.
Every tournament's the same. Every tournament for England is the same. Pin all of our hopes on Harry Kane. We'll probably get an ankle injury. We'll be talking about it in 15 years' time. What would have been if it wasn't for this one player who broke his metatarsal or whatever? It could be a calamity as far as I'm concerned for England. I actually think they could get knocked out in the second round. Good chance for me that they could play Portugal, even Germany. Yeah, so look, I just hope that they play with freedom. That's actually the only thing that I'm looking for. There isn't a point having all of these young players and not just giving them the opportunity to go out and enjoy themselves at Wembley in front of their own fans, because I think the front six players will be more than good enough. And just you know, I know it sounds very, very simple to say just go and attack. I don't think they should just play with wanton abandon, but certainly the emphasis should be on being on the front foot. I think that's their recipe for success, rather than packing the team full of defenders, which I know we've spoken about before. But yeah, look, we'll see exactly how it goes. Of course, Croatia, tough the first game around. I'm thinking England will win it narrowly. Just Jonathan and Gregor, I want your thoughts on, as Scotland fans, how you're feeling going into it. It's very different, of course. It's been a long, long wait. But you don't want that feeling of just going along for the ride either. Jonathan, how are you feeling?
It's just brilliant. I can't tell you how, you know, I think you have to be Scottish to appreciate what it's like having been in the wilderness for so long and watched these tournaments come and go and enjoyed them but not being part of them, and watched with envy the Welsh and the Northern Irish and so on. And just feels amazing to be part of it. I mean, I bought my daughter Panini stickers album for this. She's eight, and she's kind of not quite ready for it, but I'm certainly ready for it. And just getting Scotland players and being able to stick them in, even though one of them was Liam Palmer, who's not in the squad. But you know, it's really exciting. We're part of it, and you're looking at, you know, buying all the Euro magazines, and there's a feature on Scotland. It just feels like, I don't know, you've sort of made it. You're part of the kind of family, as it were. I don't know. It's a funny feeling. I'm just really excited. I've thought a lot about the last two Scotland tournaments that I covered as a journalist as well, 1996 and 1998, and how enjoyable they were, even though we had the inevitable disappointment in the end. I like the group. It suits Scotland. I like the way the fixtures work out. The order of the games is good. I like the fact they've invented, you know, third place teams can qualify. It's a funny group in that finishing third in Group D might be as good as finishing first if you look at the way the second round works out. Because I think you're right. You could play Portugal in the second round by winning the group. You could get a much better draw by finishing third. So look. I'm not making any big predictions, but we've got a chance. We've got a chance of getting points out of every game, and that's amazing. We've got a good manager. We've got a forward. We've got two best left backs in the world.
I love it. We've got a forward. Tom's banging on about how Harry Kane always delivers. He's going to score so many goals. Jonathan, we've got a forward. Brilliant.
Only a Scot would know how much that actually means. sat through all the Ollie McBurney and Stephen Fletcher years.
The thing about it is, Jonathan, everything that I asked you about, you know, not going along for the ride, your sense of jubilation just for qualifying. I wonder whether you think the Scotland squad might feel the same, the relief of qualification, but maybe just the feeling, look, we'll give it a good go, we'll see what happens, might count against them.
I don't think it will, to be fair, because I think Steve Clarke is just not that sort. And you've got players like McTominay and Robertson and Tierney, who are very sort of driven individuals. So actually, no, I don't think it's going to be the kind of happy tourist thing. I think we'll be a hard, rugged team to play against as well.
I don't think that can be a bad thing. That just brought to mind. I was reading in our kind of Euros preview pullout, Ashley Williams writing about how when Wales qualified, it was like they were all looking around like, he said this is comical. This felt comical to us. It was like, what the hell are we doing here? And, you know, because just getting there was such a prize for them, and there was a great team spirit. And I think there's something similar being built with Scotland, and that, you know, that can take you quite far. So I don't think that's going to be we're just going to get caught up and we've made it here, that's it, you know, put our feet up, no chance. And if you want to know what, you know, how it feels and why we've got big, massive smiles all over our face, I was 14 the last time in 98, and now I'm a dad. that sums up. I was at school and now I'm a dad. That's the last, you know, that's the years that have passed between this. So we are just delighted to be part of the party. And I think,
let's hope you're not a granddad next time.
I know, yeah.
Thanks, Tom.
this is the thing. Look, I like the fact that you mentioned Wales last time around as well, because actually, Gregor, I think the approach from Steve Clarke, Scotland, is somewhat similar. And I think it's really, the use of McTominay in particular has been really, really clever. We mentioned some of the other great players in the team as well. Do you think they will elevate themselves to be greater than the sum of their parts?
I think they already have. I think they've already proven they can do that. And a lot, you know, the credit goes to Steve Clarke for that. When you're talking about, are there issues or question marks? There are, but Scotland kind of seem to be approaching that or viewing them through a completely different lens. It's like, you know, we've got a lot of good midfielders. Who are we going to pick? Will we play McGinn slightly advanced, or is he going to be one of the two that are sitting? Is McTominay going to play at the back because we've got so many good midfielders? There are a few questions like that, but it's about getting most of our best players on the pitch if we can. And, you know, as I say, Jay McAdams, as he calls himself now, he's added another option, because Lyndon Dykes transformed. You know, I don't think without Lyndon Dykes, saying he would play for Scotland, I don't think we would be here. And now Adams, you know, there was a glimpse of them two working quite well together up front, so we could even play with a front two and be, you know, I think they're two guys who I don't think many defenders would enjoy playing against. They're better players, but they are physical, they work very hard, and they've got, you know, a little bit of quality as well. So, who knows? Surprise package. Let's see.
You could be the surprise package. A bit like Wales last time around, Jonathan. I know you mentioned the third team can qualify. How important is a win in the first game for Scotland? What could it do for them?
Yeah, I mean, with that game, and I think you're almost through, I think 3 points is probably going to end up taking you through, even if it's just a third place berth. So that'd be enormous. I mean, the Czechs are actually quite decent. They're probably the same standard as Scotland. Maybe slightly better on paper, but a win would be amazing. You've almost booked your place in the next round, and then you go to Wembley with a free hit. I mean, I don't expect a win, to be honest. I could see two draws in those two opening games, and it going all the way to the last game. But you've got me dreaming there.
This is exactly, this is far too romantic for me. You know, you two are usually, you know, you're straight to the point, you're serious, dare I say dour at times. And look at you now. It's all romance, lovey-dovey, you know, oh, we're just happy to be there, we can't wait. I was expecting, you know, some realism to it, no?
You're making us feel uncomfortable, but yeah, no, I mean, that's why we're giggling like kids, because it's, we're not used to this as Scots.
What we are used to is having some you know, any hope extinguished very quickly. So let's see how we're speaking next week, and you know, whether we've still got these big smiles on our face or not.
Absolutely. Look, I think Scotland, for me, we'll talk about them a little bit later on, because I think they could do great things. We'll be picking out later on, by the way, what we think might be some of the surprises of the tournament, some of the great players, our golden boot winner too. We'll hear who Jose Mourinho thinks will be the players to watch at Euro 2020 very shortly. But let me reflect on Wales. Since I'm here in Baku, Azerbaijan, I've made the trip. I'll be watching Wales' first two games against Switzerland and Turkey. I just wanted to talk about really what Baku has been like. There aren't many Wales fans, I've got to say. We're expecting about 600, but actually the stadium here in Baku can hold more fans than any other stadium at the whole of Euro 2020. 31,000 fans in all. The first game is massively important for Wales. Of course, they're taking on Switzerland. They won't have many of their fans here either. They'll be very much from the local vicinity. But that first game is all important for them. They're taking on the team number 13 in the world, who topped their group, a group including Denmark, in their qualifiers. But I think why it's so important for them to get 3 points in that first game is the second match will be like a home game for Turkey because of its proximity to Turkey, the fact you can get an easy flight here for a few hours from Istanbul, and the fact that their last game, they'll be going to Italy to play Italy at the Stadio Olimpico, and that will be a very, very tough game as well. Maybe Italy will feel they're already through at that point. Maybe they'll rest some players, but you can't really think about that. And there are concerns. I've been to the Wales squad. I spoke to Joe Allen yesterday. He's only played a couple of games for his club, Stoke City, since the end of March. Those were the two warm-up matches. Aaron Ramsey of Juventus is back, but again, he's had many, many fitness concerns this year. And Gareth Bale, who's the player that everyone still wants to talk about, hasn't, of course, gone back to his peak production at Tottenham Hotspur. He's, of course, getting back towards somewhere near his fitness level. But again, that the approach for Wales in this competition can't just be a little bit like it was last time around, get the ball to Gareth. There's a whole new back line as well. So look, they are reflecting on 2016. They're trying to take as much as they can from 2016, this Wales squad. But I was taken aback slightly by Joe Allen, and maybe it's just because he's speaking to the media, saying that all three of those big players would be at 100% ready to give their absolute peak best. And for me, that was maybe just playing with the media a little bit and the journalists, because they just can't be. And for me, they need those three to be absolutely at their best. We'll come to who starts in the forward line in just a moment. But Tom Roddy, do Wales have any chance of doing something special in this competition without Ramsey, Bell and Allen at their absolute best?
I think when we talking about the home nations, for me, a lot of it goes to preparation, expectation, and a kind of harmony in the squads. And I completely, I had exactly the same thoughts as Gregor, thinking of Scotland, that there's this excitement about going into a first tournament in so many years, a quality there that has got them over the line and means they're going to be hard to play against. And there are, you can draw comparisons to Wales from 5 years ago. And of course, because of that, there is expectation on Wales this time. There's kind of the feeling of going on a holiday that you went on before, which was absolutely brilliant, and it doesn't meet the same standards and expectation you had before. Plus, I mean, you look at the key individuals in that squad, and it's different to it's completely different to 2016, in that Gareth Bale is an entirely different player, a much older player. And Jose Mourinho noted in our Euros pullout that yes, he scored a lot of goals for Tottenham towards the end of this season, but they weren't against the big teams. And then you've got Aaron Ramsey, who hasn't had the best season at Juventus, hasn't been involved in as much as he probably would have liked to have done. Dan James, who maybe with an optimistic viewpoint, the fact he's had a difficult time at United, going to Wales and being part of what is clearly a very harmonious squad group of players. They it could help release him. But I just think the preparations and the expectations, the situation with the manager, of course, Robert Page being brought in now, the expectation and the preparation doesn't add up to the same performance of 5 years ago.
Rob Page, I played with at Chesterfield in his last 3 years of his career, and he's someone who, like, quite rare you beat in football, but just commands complete respect from everyone, and is a really, really good guy. Very few people have a bad word to say about him, you know. And he's also a smart guy, and he's someone who I would have immediately pinpointed as, you know, someone who has a lot of potential to be a manager. And it's difficult when you start in management. He kind of, you know, he had spells at Northampton and Port Vale, and there were extenuating circumstances. I think he followed Chris Wilder at Northampton after one promotion, big shoes to fill. Port Vale, he had a really difficult chairman to work with, but he's got a reputation as a really good coach. So I think when you combine that and the fact he's been around the Wales camp for a long, long time, he was brought into the fold by Giggs, he knows everyone. As I say, they will respect him. He's not like, who's this guy, Rob Page? He's somebody, he won a lot of caps for Wales. He was a big voice in the dressing room, I've heard, even when he was playing for Wales, with big players like Bellamy around him and Giggs. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I really don't. So, you know, clearly it was a disruption, but I honestly don't think that's going to be a big issue for Wales. And looking at them, Kiefer Moore's another player you kind of throw into and say no one's going to like to play against him.
Gregor, every single person you meet here associated with Wales, all the journalists, every single fan, all the ex-players, the first two words everyone is saying is Kiefer Moore. 23 goals for club and country, Cardiff City, of course, this season. You say, you know, Scotland have got a forward. Well, of course, there's some great players in the Wales squad, but he's 6'4". You know what he does. He's also quite mobile for a centre forward. Are you surprised that he isn't starting regularly for Wales?
Yes. I mean, look, those players you were talking about are huge names and have been huge players for Wales. Ramsey and Bale. And clearly, Bale's the one here. We're talking about Bale's likely to play through the middle. So, it's a bit like England. It's like finding the right formula there. If you're playing Kiefer Moore, it's who you have playing off him. I mean, you've got to think about Dan James because of the speed, you know, running in behind. I think David Brooks is a brilliant player as well, and I think he was starting to get towards some of his best form towards the end of the season. You know, he struggled with injury and obviously got to the playoffs with Bournemouth. I think he's a really good player, and then you've got Harry Wilson as well, who's a creative player. So Wales have some really talented forwards. I think again, it's about how they deploy them and finding the right formula up front. But for me, Kiefer Moore should start because he's something very different. And I think Wales have the players who can run off him or can support him from behind. It's about playing effective football in these tournaments. And I think that is probably the most effective football that Wales could play.
Tyler Roberts as well is not a bad player.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, they've got loads of those options. They've got youth, energy, and they do have pace in those forward areas. And that's maybe what can nurse the likes of Ramsey and Bale through, that they maybe won't have to do quite as much running as they would have done a couple of years ago. It's just at the back. Chris Coleman was so... It's funny, Michael O'Neill was the same at Northern Ireland. They both were... It was the same template. They just made them so hard to beat, so solid. And they had the experience of the likes of Williams to pull them together. And that's what they're lacking now. I mean, so those centre-backs are quite decent. You know, Rodon, Meth, and they're good players, but... Do they have the? Are they going to be as just, you know, gnarly and difficult as they were 5 years ago? They're not. So it's just going to have to be a different Wales. But I mean, talk about, you know, Robert Page's job. The fact he seems to have shown such confidence, and you know, even the selection of someone like Colwell, he's coming to that job as if he's been Wales manager for 4 or 5 years. That's what strikes me. He's got a calm assurance about him. I don't know if that's what he was like as a bloke in the dressing room, but he doesn't seem very flustered.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. He's kind of confident, commands respect, you know, good guy, a voice in the changing room. That's the kind of teammate he was. And as I say, I always thought he would have a good chance in management and as a coach. And, you know, it's difficult when you start in the lower leagues. And I personally would like to see him get this opportunity. And I think, you know, as I say, he's been a part of Wales setup for a long time. And I think he's definitely a safe pair of hands.
Well, maybe I'm just a little bit biased, but I'm really excited to see what Wales can do over the next couple of games here in Baku, maybe just because I get to go to the games. We'll be looking ahead up next to what we think might happen over the coming weeks at Euro 2020. We'll hear what Jose Mourinho, the special one, thinks about that next on the podcast. But remember, since we've got programs for you each and every day, make sure you have subscribed for more of our award-winning journalism, of course, but subscribe to the podcast and the Times and the Sunday Times across all of your devices right now for less than £1 per day. Just visit thetimes.co.uk/the game and you can start your free trial.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, we're delighted to announce and welcome to the Game Podcast, the special one, Jose Mourinho, the former Manchester United, Chelsea, Real Madrid and Inter Milan boss, will be giving us his expert insights for the duration of Euro 2020 and heartily supporting his beloved Portugal, I am sure. But he'll be giving his insights on England and all the home nations as well throughout the competition, not just to us here at the Game, but also to the Times and the Sunday Times. You'll be able to read his exclusive columns there too. But I did get the lucky opportunity to meet Jose Mourinho a little bit earlier on last month. And I started by asking him about which players he thinks we should be keeping a close eye on at Euro 2020. Have a listen.
I think it's a great occasion for Ruben Dias to prove that he's the best central defender now. He did it in the Premier League. I think is a moment now to show it at an international level. Mbappe is, since I saw him the first time, a kind of a passion. And the season was not a very good season for him. I hope that in the Euros he shows everybody that with Cristiano and Messi on the late 30s now, it's time for him to step up and say, I'm here.
Well, let me ask you about Ruben Dias while we're here. Did you think he would come into the Premier League and look as if he's been one of the best defenders in the world and one of the best defenders at a Champions League winning side or a Premier League winning side, you know, for the last 5 years?
There is always a little question mark in front, because one thing is to play in the Portuguese League One, and another thing is to play in the Premier League. But it was the potential. It was the potential, and of course he came to a very good team with a very good coach, and he gave that step up. But of course, in terms of potential, you know where the potential is. But then how they adapt, how fast they do, can they make the jump? And this is where I give the credit to the kid, because he arrived and immediately transformed the team.
And on Kylian Mbappe, you say he needs to send that message out to the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, to world football really, that he's the next one. Do you think he can reach the same levels as those two players? Because they could go down in history as the best.
I hope so. When I was a very young assistant coach at Barcelona, I fell in love with Ronaldo Nazario, which for me was absolutely incredible. I remember some matches sitting next to Mr. Robson, and even Mr. Robson, with the whole experience he had, he was amazed with what that guy could do. He didn't better because he had incredible bad injuries when he was at Inter, but that Ronaldo was absolutely incredible. And I see Mbappe with Ronaldo things. I don't like to compare players because so many times it's unfair, but I see Mbappe with Ronaldo things. And I think it's time. I know that he's world champion already, but I think it's time for him in the next couple of years to put, you know, like I used to say, to kick the bucket and to tell everybody that that I'm the best. I think he has incredible potential. He's the kind of player that fears, opponents fear. You play against him and you fear. That's the way I look at him.
That's the view of the special one, Jose Mourinho. You'll be able to hear more from him, not just on the game podcast throughout Euro 2020, but you can also read his views in the Times and the Sunday Times as well. Ruben Dias, he's picked out Kylian Mbappe. He stuck his neck out on that one to say that he's going to shine at this tournament as well. And we thought we would consider some of the things we think might happen over the coming weeks. Firstly, I think we should discuss who we think might be winners. Now, guys, let's be realistic. As good as Scotland and even England might be, who do we think might win this competition? Thinking with our heads here. Tom Roddy, I'll start with you.
My instinct immediately goes towards France, largely because they've been there and done it. I think the whole, you know, Belgium are quite understandably come into the conversation. They've got such talent, but it slightly feels like their generation, this golden generation that they had, is coming to towards the end of a cycle. And maybe we'll see some more talents coming through this year, but it feels like it has come towards an end. And I just look at France and I see Mbappe as a golden boot winner, because he's just, I mean, what he did at the World Cup was incredible at the age he was. He's a real superstar, Mbappe, and I don't think Jose has quite stuck his neck out there picking him out as a player of the tournament, because I think most people would expect him to be. But they're just such a settled side. They're the opposite of England in the way that you could predict that lineup. And let's not forget as well N'Golo Kanté, because any team seems unsurprisingly to do exceptionally well when he's in the side. He offers the beautiful balance that allows the brilliant attacking players France have got to play with freedom. And they've got a strong defence as well. It's beautifully balanced. And if they did go on to win it, then you would think Kanté would be on his way towards a Ballon d'Or.
Gregor Robertson, who do you think might win it?
It really is hard to look beyond France. I know that everyone's saying it. They just have a galaxy of stars. The only thing is the return of Benzema. You know, he's a fantastic player, but it's kind of Giroud playing up top and the players running beyond him, Mbappe running beyond him. That's been the go-to thing. So, look, they have the best squad, undoubtedly. And I have to say, I watched a bit of Portugal last night, and I really like Portugal as well. I think, you know, they have as well an outstanding squad. When you look at, you know, Ronaldo, Jota, João Felix, you know, they've got Bernardo Silva. Yeah, they've got, you know, Fernandes scored an absolute worldie. Did you see his goal? Absolute worldie, just from the edge of the box, whipped in the top corner. It's so easy for him. They've got, you know, players who can win a game with a moment of individual magic and brilliance like that. Slight question marks at the back, but they, you know, they. I think those are my two. Belgium, I agree, I think they've gone slightly past their best, and also at the back is their issue. They've got some kind of aging defenders, and so yeah, I'll go for, I think France are the favourites for me, but Portugal I like.
Let's move on next to who we think might be the top scorer, the golden boot winner. This one should be pretty easy. Tom Roddy?
I'm sticking with Mbappe because of how far France will go. Otherwise, I think if England go far, then Harry Kane will definitely be up there. But with them facing a problematic first knockout round, which it's hard to see past that, I'm going to stick with Mbappe.
Harry Kane. That's all I have to say. No, I think, I mean, crikey, this record's a joke. Mbappe's clearly going to be up there too, but I think Harry Kane might do it. I think England have got enough creativity, enough players who are going to make him the chances. Enough players who like to hit the deck quite easily and win him a penalty. yeah, I'm going for Harry Kane.
Jonathan?
I mean, the golden boot winner tends to be someone who scores a load in the group stages. So I think Lukaku, I think he was almost there last time, wasn't he? Him and Harry Kane, one goal separated them or something. But yeah, I think he'll score an absolute packet against the likes of Finland and Russia, and probably like Wales or something in the second round. And no matter what else Belgium do, he'll have enough to win. I mean, he's been in such incredible form as well. He's absolutely at his prime at the moment. So Lukaku for me.
The surprise package, Tom Roddy, of the tournament.
I've got this feeling about Denmark doing quite well. I like them. I think they've got a solid foundation. A really strong midfield and a decent defence. I think their only issue is who's going to put the ball in the back of the net, really, which a lot of teams struggle with. And as Johnny said earlier, a lot of these teams that do well at tournaments, but because of what Johnny said earlier, a lot of these teams doing well at tournaments are having a strong core. So I think Denmark could do really well this summer.
Denmark, okay. Gregor?
I think Wales. Wales could finish runner-up in that group. And then if you look at who they could be playing, I think they're playing somebody from Group B after that. And it's Denmark, Finland, or Russia, Belgium would win the group, I think. So I think Wales could spring a surprise. I don't think, you know, there's not that much expectation about them this time. I don't think there is, really, just because of the disruption. And as you say, people thinking that a lot of their best players are either entering the tournament not in the best form, or their best form is behind them. But I still think that Wales could surprise one or two. I'm not saying Scotland, because I think that wouldn't be a surprise, you know?
And which player do you think will really announce themselves to the international stage, Tom Roddy?
I'm going for one who I'm scared won't even play because of the richness of quality in his position. Spain, I mean, we all know Spain's quality from the last generation. I mean, they dominated it around 2010, 2012, 2008. And we're seeing a sort of new cycle come through. And we haven't even mentioned Spain because they're not on that kind of top level. And there's not a whole lot of expectation on them this year. But the one player who I've been so enjoyed watching over this last year at the times I have been able to watch him is Pedri, the 18-year-old midfielder who had, you know, you think of this tournament being played this year and the players like, say, Jude Bellingham, who wouldn't have, there's pretty much no chance he'd have been involved had this tournament been played the year it was meant to happen last year. And those who have benefited from that wait, from the delay, and Pedri is one of them. I just enjoy watching him. He plays simply, but considering his age, there are comparisons to be drawn in the in the maturity of the way he controls the game with Bellingham, the way he controls the game and dictates play. The issue, of course, is that he's got Thiago Alcantara, Sergio Busquets, Koke, Rodri. I mean, there's a chance he won't even get many minutes. But I think if he does, then he will get a stage in which we'll see a player who is going to be a real class talent over the next decade.
This might sound like a daft one because we know him very well. I just have a feeling that Jack Grealish could be the England's most important player by the end of this tournament. I think he's completely unflustered by anything. And I think, you know, there's a lot of the focus is on Phil Foden, and understandably so, he's a great talent. But I just think that Grealish is pretty unique. And you know, again, he may not play. He may be an impact player in early games, and he might have to work his way into the starting 11. He may not get into the starting 11, but I think he will have a big impact in this tournament. And, you know, we know him very well, but I think that will put him on a higher plane, and it may even mean that he's no longer at Villa next season.
If he's not in England starting 11, I will be beginning the hashtag Southgate out, believe me. Jonathan?
My feeling is actually Jude Bellingham. You know, we've seen him play brilliantly as a more attacking midfielder. We've seen him play as a more defensive midfielder. I think because Jordan Henderson's got injury problems, he could get thrust in. And if he does, going by what we've seen so far, if he does get a run, he could emerge as absolutely stellar for England.
What a positive note to end on. Thank you, Jonathan. Another great English talent coming to the fore, not to be too biased. Look, that has whet the appetite. It surely has. For some of the great players we'll see from not just the home nations, but some of the other countries involved in Euro 2020 as well. Jonathan Northcroft, Tom Roddy, Gregor Robertson, thank you very much for being with me for the past hour or so. Remember, we will have a podcast for you on the game each and every day of the tournament that there are matches. It all starts tomorrow, of course, with the opening game between Italy and Turkey, and a very busy weekend for all of us as well. So we will be back with you very, very soon. Make sure you're subscribed, though, of course, not just to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, but also to the Times and the Sunday Times. If you sign up today, you can get it for less than £1 a day. Go to thetimes.co.uk/the game to start your free trial. We'll see you soon. Take care.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.